This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Many people enjoy watching or performing magic tricks. The surprise when you're expecting one thing and seeing another can really be fun. However, these unexpected changes are far less enjoyable in our everyday lives. Today, Pastor Sam Horn will begin a sermon titled, Never Stones or Serpents. It comes from James chapter 4, and it tells how we can continue to follow God when unexpected things arise. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
This morning, I would like to ask you to turn to the fourth chapter of the book that we have been spending many weeks in together, where James has been coming before us, and I want, you know, as we look at where James is going today, I want us to go all the way back to the beginning when we first met James. And one of the things we did together before we even looked at verse 1 in the book was we tried to get an understanding of who James was. Because this is the man that is going to be shepherding our hearts through his word that the Lord inspired for the rest of the book. And so we really wanted to take time to find out who James was, because he's a name that's in our Bible. We noted that he was the Lord's half-brother. We noted that for the entire time of the Lord's earthly life, James opposed him. James was not a believer. James might have been a good moral man, but he was not a believer in who Jesus Christ claimed to be. He knew about his brother. He could see with his eyes. He obviously lived in the same home. James never talks about how he felt. But after he became a Christian, he became the pastor of the very first church in the New Testament. And he writes this letter to congregations that are filled up with people that have gone out from that church where he was the pastor. And we noted something interesting about a nickname that had been given to James by those in Jerusalem who knew him. He was called Just James. Just James. And the word there, just, doesn't mean just another James. This is just another James, or this is just another James moment. It actually has to do with his character, with what he was known for, with what sort of was at work in his inner life. James was a man who was righteous. So when you hear the nickname Just James in the early church writers, they're actually referring to a man who was known for his piety, a man who was known as a righteous man. And so my question this morning, and this is where I think James is going to take us, is what drives the heart of a person whose faith is wholehearted, single-focused, and fully trusting? We talked about the operating system, and we spent quite a bit of time looking at the operating system, wisdom from above. And then when that operating system is humming away and it's driving what comes out of our life, it's like the transmission of our life. It takes our inner belief. It takes what we have put our faith in. It takes what we believe about God and about his word and about his world and about our place in that world and our mission. It takes our beliefs, and like a transmission in a car, it transforms those beliefs into behavior. It drives those beliefs into the behaviors of our life, our words, our actions, our deeds, our thoughts. And we noted that we do what we do, and we say what we say, and we think what we think, and we feel what we feel, because we believe what we believe. And we believe what we believe about God and about his word, and all of those beliefs drive our behavior. They drive what comes out of our mouth. They drive what we dwell on. They drive the emotions in our life. Those beliefs are like the transmission of our soul. And James has been very, very clear about that. And so the question for somebody who says, I've got a wholehearted, Single focus, fully trusting faith. By the way, let's say that together so we don't miss a Sunday, all right? Let's say that James is looking for believers who have a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith. I hope that if you're married, I hope that if at 2 o'clock in the morning your wife woke you up and shook you awake and said, what does James want you to have? You would say a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith. I hope it's that ingrained in you. I hope if your teenage kids walked in your bedroom at 1 in the morning and shook you both awake, you would say, where is your wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith? Because I want it to be that ingrained into us. It's not just that we say this every week like a little mantra. I really want us to grab James, and I want James to grab us. So what is at the heart of a life that thinks this way and that believes this way and that has a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith? And I think what Garrett did up here a few minutes ago cuts to the core of that. At the heart of a life like that is a set of appetites. At the heart of what goes on in the person who James is writing to, who has a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith, is a set of appetites. And those appetites are going to come out in everything they do. And when you looked at James' life, when people who knew James well wanted to describe what they saw coming out of this man, what he hungered and thirsted for, they used the word just, righteous. And this is exactly what Jesus, his older half-brother, said, right? Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. And so this morning, I want to ask you to let James sit across the table from you and really sort of peel back what's going on, not just about your beliefs, and not just about your wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith, but about the appetites of your heart. What do you hunger and thirst after? Now, in order to kind of catch up to where James is going, let's just observe three things, and then we'll get into where James is headed. Thing number one is that James is writing to a group of people who are making certain claims. And what they are claiming is that they do have a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith. Their faith is living, and that they are growing and maturing, and they are not double-minded, because that's everything James has been talking about in chapter 1. And so there are three dangers that James is going to help them see. I mean, he's going to have to do an intervention. You know, I think all of us remember certain reality TV shows that were popular a number of years back, and one of those shows had to do with interventions, where there was a person whose life had become ensnared in some kind of life destructive pattern or some sort of behavior that just brought them into bondage. It might be hoarding, or it might be alcoholism, or it might be substance abuse, but something captured their life, and by the time we are watching the show, it has destroyed their life. It has impacted every part of their life. If they're hoarding, you can't even get in their house. If they're captured in alcohol or substance abuse, they can't have a job. They've lost everything. And their particular bondage doesn't just affect them. It has deeply affected the lives of other people around them. And at some point, somebody in their life, whether it's a friend or a family member who loves them or somebody that's concerned about them, sometimes it's one, sometimes it's more than one, they decide to do an intervention. And then the whole show is about that intervention. Well, that's what James is doing here. He's coming to a group of people, and he's saying to them, it's time to do an intervention. Because you obviously think certain things about yourself, But the evidence that is coming out over here is so great that either you are in denial or you are blind. And so chapter 4 is written to people who think a certain way about themselves, but James is actually going to come and say, now we need to talk about what's really going on in your life. I know that you think you're not double-minded, but you are. That's the first danger that James is going to talk about. And he's going to get real. Look at verse 8. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your minds or your hearts, you double-minded. So he's looking at his readers, and he's saying to them, now, I know you've been listening to me for 3 chapters, and we just spent a good bit of time looking at the wisdom from above and the wisdom from below, and you are looking back at me, and you are saying, we're all about that wisdom from above, James. That's us. We're with you on that. And I get the double-mindedness. No, we're not. I am not double-minded. We are all about you. And James is looking at their life, and he is saying, we have got to talk. And here's the first danger. You are, in fact, double-minded. Here's the second danger. You are self-deceived. Double-minded Christians are often, and I could almost say it this way, they are almost always self-deceived. And this is a great danger that James has warned about at least 3 times thus far in the letter. In chapter 1, verse 16, he says, "Do not be deceived, my brothers." He says the same thing in chapter 1, verse 22, and then again in chapter 26. And it's like he stops and he looks at the people that he's writing to, and he is saying to them, I want to talk straight to you. You are double-minded, and the reason you can't see it is because you have deceived your heart about it. And then the third danger is that all of this has led them somewhere where they don't want to be. And where it has led them is this: they have become aligned with the enemies of God. They have lined up with the army of the wrong kingdom. I mean, if you were talking about a battle between the kingdoms and you have been taken out of the kingdom of darkness and placed into the kingdom of light, and God, using the word of truth, brought life forth in you and implanted that word in your soul and put the Holy Spirit as a mark of amazing grace into your life, and then he said to you, now, as a citizen of this great kingdom, I'm going to send you to all the little kingdoms of the world as an ambassador so that you can be salt and light. And then one day you woke up and you lined up with the enemy. You actually showed up as a soldier in that army. Something would be radically wrong. Wouldn't you agree? And that's exactly where James is going. And so they are so blind and self-deceived that James has to do an intervention. Which brings us to some important reminders that we need to keep in mind as we look at these 10 verses together this morning. Here's reminder number 1. James is writing to Christians. James is writing to Christians. He calls them brothers. He's writing to Christians. So whatever he has to say to these brothers, the reason God preserved it in his word is because that there are other brothers, there are other Christians who are going to need this. And we are some of those Christians this morning. So number 1, James is writing to Christians. Number 2, he is writing to a congregation. So this is why a lot of the language in James that might get obscured a little bit in your English Bible is actually written to a group of people. Like when he says, you desire, you murder, you covet. He's not talking about individuals alone. He's talking about the corporate body. He's talking to the church at large. So we all need to hear this. It's not just that there's one or two people in the congregation that are struggling with this. The entire congregation, all of us, need to hear whatever James has to say in this section. And then the third thing we need to keep in mind is that what he says to the congregation is designed to impact individual believers. It's designed to impact individual believers. We could say it this way. James is not about to let somebody hide out in the crowd. He's not going to let me, or he's not going to let you kind of back away and just sort of crawl into a corner and put a bunch of people around us and then kind of smile at James when he's talking and saying, well, I hear you. He's actually wanting the words that he's saying to the group to penetrate right into the heart of the individual. And so what has to happen now is that James has to help people who claim to have a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith. They claim to not be double-minded. He has to do an intervention. And so as we look at the three sections that make up these 10 verses, here are four questions that you should ask. All right? Question number one, what evidence does James use to make the case that these believers are actually operating from the wrong wisdom? Okay, it's one thing if James were sitting down with us and saying these things, and we just sort of bowed our heads and kind of just sighed and said, James, you are right. That is exactly what's going on. I have been operating from the wrong wisdom for a long time. What do I do? But that's not what's going on here. What's going on here is this. Instead of this response, you have people looking back at James and saying, James, that is a powerful truth. That is awesome. I'm so glad you contrasted the two wisdoms. That is amazing. And I just want you to know, I really appreciate everything you've been saying about wisdom from above and everything you've been saying about wisdom from below. I don't think I've ever heard it explained that way, and I am all about that. In fact, I've got my little papyri New Testament here. I don't know what they had in the first century, and I've written all these notes on it. You should see my notes. Man, I can't keep the quill moving fast enough. And James is looking at them, and he is saying, we have got to talk. Because all that you are saying back to me that sounds so good is actually being betrayed by the evidence that is coming out of your life. So what is the evidence that he's going to point to? That's question number one. Question number two is, once he shows them the evidence, you remember what Garrett said when he was talking to our kids and held up the $5 bill at the end? He said, this $5 bill is not the problem. The problem is where? The problem is not in the $5 bill. The problem is where? It's in your heart. So there is some root cause for all of this that James is going to expose. And then thirdly, here's the big thing we want to ask ourselves, and that is this. How does God feel about this? How does God feel about this? And what does he do about it? And then the fourth question is, what response does God call for them to give? What does God want them to do about this? All right? So James is going to unpack this intervention along three lines. Here's the first line. He confronts the devastating reality. Now remember who he's talking to. He's talking to Christians. He's talking to a congregation, and he's wanting it to go right down into the individual life of the people who make up that congregation. And those people are convinced that they have a living faith, and that faith is growing, maturing, and that they're not double-minded. And so James says, I've got to talk to you. I'm going to have to confront a reality that you're not thinking about. And here's a reality, and you can see it. What causes quarrels and fights among you? In other words, James says, I'm going to point to an undeniable reality. You're making these claims. You're lining up with what I'm saying about wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith, and you're acknowledging wisdom from above, but here is an undeniable reality. There are quarrels and fights among you. And what this means is that the shalom God has made has been broken by you. Go back to chapter 3, verse 18. If wisdom from above is operating in your life and in your relationships or in a congregation, Here is what it produces. A harvest of righteousness is sown in shalom by those who make shalom. And so James says, I'm going to give you undeniable, irrefutable evidence that you have not been using wisdom that promotes and protects and preserves shalom. You've been using the other wisdom. And the reason I can say that is because of this undeniable thing that I'm observing, and that is you are at war with each other. So this convincing question, what causes wars and what causes fights among you? The word quarrels is the word for war. It's the idea of a prolonged military war between two groups or between two nations. And the word fights in this is a word that would sort of carry out the idea of an individual battle inside that big war. So you guys are at war with each other, and there are battles that erupt. And the nature of the battle, based on the word James uses here, is that it is verbal. It is verbal. The idea here with the term James uses is this. It's a heated dispute. It is a loud argument. It is personal defamation. It is disparagement. James is saying, look, there is a verbal war going on in you and among you, and what is happening is you are doing things with your mouth against each other that is shattering the shalom that God made. Have you ever been in a place where you walk in and it is so tense and the verbal language that is going on between people in that circumstance, you realize, whoa. You ever felt this way? You walk in and you sit down and you're like, hey, how's it going? Whoa. Okay, you know what? I think I'll come back later. You ever do that? You ever walk in a room and people are having a conversation? Ooh, I think I'll come back later. That's the idea that James is wanting you to sense. There is this battle that is going on. And James says, now, why is that? He gives a clarifying answer. Is not the reason for this that your passions are at war in you? The reason that you're at war with each other is because there is a war going on inside you. And the war that is going on inside you has to do with your passions. The word passion there is the word we get our English word hedonism from. And it's a strong word. In fact, James uses a synonym of this word back in chapter 1 when he was trying to explain to us why temptations are so attractive to us. Temptations are so attractive to a believer because there's something inside that has an appetite, a strong yearning for that thing that is being offered by the temptation. And James says there is a desire, there is an appetite that is going on in you, and that appetite is driving you to certain conduct. This is what James talked about in chapter 1, but it's what Jesus referred to in Luke 8:14 when he said that the seed would fall on certain ground in people's lives, and then it would be choked by the cares, the riches, and the pleasures of life. That word pleasure in Jesus' statement there is the same word that James uses here. There is something, there's an appetite in you that yearns for something pleasurable. That word can sometimes be used for good things. But in this context, what's going on around here makes real clear that James is not talking about that kind of a good desire. He's talking about an appetite for something that God has either said no to or has not given you yet.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for Sunday morning worship at 9 a.m. or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about PBC, please email radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.